It is 8:30. Have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish, co-editor at Eat This State. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I actually got some sleep this week. It's very nice for a change.
Okay. Well, we'll expect that much more out of you then over the next 29 minutes.
Well, we can destroy your expectations for you. That's no problem.
All right. Well, big immigration march on Monday.
Yeah, it was really quite joyful and quite inspiring. There were some really discouraging problems with the local media coverage of it, however, and with SPD for that matter. There's quite a backlash that's been developing in sort of middle America and in conservative talking points to these immigration marches and to the whole concept of quote unquote illegal aliens. And we saw quite a bit of that here in Seattle. One of the things that was not reported by either SPD or local media, they reported, for example, that there were 7 arrests, 5 of which were on weapon charges. Well, the way our local papers reported that, it made it sound like it was marchers who were detained on weapons charges. That was not the case. Well, who was detained on weapons charges? And this is after a run-up to the march in which organizers were receiving a fairly steady stream of death threats. Who was detained on the march were some self-identified Nazis who were hanging around with weapons, with guns. And there's really one conclusion you can draw from that, which is that they came to cause mayhem. That remarkably was not reported by local police. It was also not reported that a car that actually drove into the crowd at one point along the march route caused injuries, that SPD was not actually blocking traffic on the intersections for the first couple miles of the march along Jackson Street. And SPD seemed to have an attitude about the march all the way along. Now, reportedly, I heard from at least one person, and I don't know, I can't vouch for this because I certainly didn't hear it from SPD, that they were irritated with march organizers dating back to the April 12th march. And you know, since the march organizers were all non-white and most of them were immigrants, there wasn't a whole lot of trust in the police, and you can kind of see why. And SPD did more than verify that non-trust. So you had people lurking around with guns. There's really no other logical conclusion than that it was an assassination plot. And you can almost draw a direct line between that and the blatant misinformation and the often racist xenophobia that's going on with media icons like Lou Dobbs and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the whole Fox crew and all these, you know, rabidly reactionary local talk show hosts in various places in the Southwest and across the country, and the kind of misinformation that they're putting out around the immigrant reform question. Trace pretty much a direct line between that and the hatred of not just people who are undocumented that are in this country, but anybody who looks like they might be undocumented in this country. And of course, you know, I have some Canadian relatives who are here illegally, and they don't seem to have that problem. But then they're white, so we still got a lot of work to do on this issue, and it involves obviously lobbying Congress at this point for some kind of truly comprehensive immigration reform. But it also has to do with cultural acceptance. It also has to do with recognizing that the people who are pouring into the streets in cities and towns across this country are part of this country, are part of the fabric of our culture and of our economy, and need to be welcomed and embraced as such rather than feared and treated as the other, as the outsider.
All right, moving along. You reported last week on the Parks Department, and this week it turned out they're backing down?
Yes. Susan Martin, I don't know if she's a housewife or what she does. She's an ordinary resident citizen who lives in Laurelhurst, found out literally a week and a half ago that there were fireworks scheduled for last night as part of the opening of boating season today that were scheduled they're going to be shot off from a barge in Union Bay. Now, the problem with this is that there's a very sensitive sensitive wetlands area called the Montlake Fill that lies between the UW Athletic Fields and the Center for Urban Horticulture in Laurelhurst, got something like 131 species of birds in it, a lot of plants that are part of a restoration effort. Very sensitive environmental area. And the city, in issuing a permit for these fireworks, had taken into account none of the potential environmental impact, not only of the fireworks themselves, but also the people tromping through these wetlands in order to get to the public viewing area. Well, remarkably enough, the Parks Department, after all of its controversies in recent months that are virtually identical sort of situations where there are these very top-down decisions where the public hearing is held with no kind of real notification of the public, and where there's kind of a commercial interest involved, Susan and some allies went to a Parks Board meeting a week ago Thursday, got Ken Bounds, the embattled superintendent, to agree to refer the permit back to the special events committee that had originally approved it on April 12th for reconsideration. And that's where we were last week. Well, they did meet, in fact, on Tuesday and came to a tentative decision. And this was something that Windermere Realty, the sponsor of the fireworks, had suggested, to move the barge from Union Bay all the way out into the middle of Lake Washington. And key testimony in this came from the special events coordinator for the city of Kirkland, who talked about a July 4th fireworks display last year that got Kirkland in the city and the special events coordinator herself in a tremendous amount of trouble with federal investigators because the fireworks were set off next to a pair of nesting eagles with chicks at Yarrow Point, and the eagles fled the nest for a few days, and there was concern that the chicks would die. Well, the chicks didn't die, but the federal government, because bald eagles are a protected species, went ballistic over this. And it turns out there were also a pair of nesting eagles, it's the height of nesting season right now, with chicks in the arboretum that were going to be affected by the fireworks. Well, by Wednesday morning, Windermere decided to do the right thing, and they canceled the fireworks. This was something that Susan and the allies that she recruited, environmentalists, people from the birding community, and so forth, managed to accomplish in about 7 days. That they got the Parks Department to back down. Windermere Realty took a huge financial hit in deciding to cancel the fireworks. They had spent something like $60,000 on advertising and promotion, and you know, honestly, they probably have a legal case against the city because the city didn't do its due diligence in issuing the permit in the first place. But very encouraging from the standpoint of the Parks Department, which has made so many controversial decisions in recent months, and actually going back over a period of years, where citizens, you know, ordinary people from the neighborhoods, challenged them on a decision, and rather than listen to the concerns that they had, reacted defensively, reacted with hostility, and rammed the decisions on through anyway. At this point, Ken Bounds, the superintendent, is kind of a political football between the mayor's department, he's very close to Greg Nichols, and city council, which has been batting around a proposal to amend the city's charter to change the accountability of department heads so that they are accountable to the city council rather than to the mayor's office. And that's specifically because Bounds has gotten so many complaints from so many different neighborhoods. So they may be operating with greater sensitivity. We'll find out next week when there's a public hearing on a fireworks display permit application for Seward Park in June, which, of course, is also an environmentally sensitive area. But, you know, it's an encouraging start for the Parks Department, and Windermere Realty acquitted itself admirably. And Susan and her allies did a remarkable thing over the last week.
All right, moving along. Report out this week that Hanford Tanks and the tank farms actually have more leaks.
Yeah, this is a report from Heart of America Northwest. It aired on 60 Minutes last Sunday, so it got a nice large national audience. And a report that came out Monday at the same time, and I'll bet our friends at Heart of America had something to do with this also, that the cleanup costs for Hanford have now escalated to an estimated $11.3 billion, with a B, dollars. That's a cost that has tripled in only 6 years since the year 2000. Hanford has got a lot of problems right now. There are a lot of things that need to be looked at closely in terms of the cleanup effort is not being funded adequately. Costs are escalating out of control. And oddly enough, there's going to be a public hearing on Hanford cleanup in Seattle next week. And I'll give details on that when we go through some events at the end of the program.
All right, jumping to national, Porter Goss, head of the CIA, is out.
Yeah, after only 19 months, the former congressman from Florida who tried to reform and heavily politicize, I might add, the CIA, is out. And more disturbing is who is reportedly coming in to replace him. It is General Michael Hayden, the Bush administration, once again rewarding somebody for breaking the law and being a loyal soldier and doing things that are unethical. We saw it with Alberto Gonzalez. We saw it with Condoleezza Rice. We saw it with John Bolton. It's like break the law, get a promotion. This is how the Bush administration works. In Hayden's case, he's been the director of the National Security Agency from 2002 up until late last year. In that capacity, he oversaw the illegal, warrantless domestic spying operation that President Bush initiated. And since December, when that program was made public, Hayden has been probably the most visible defender of that program. So the guy we've got coming in to run the CIA is somebody who has been proudly defending a criminal operation for the last 4 years. This is kind of a worrisome development. It's also an opportunity, and our various local representatives, senators, and congresspeople need to hear about this possibly, particularly those in the Senate where they're going to have confirmation hearings. Those confirmation hearings need to be used all over again to publicize the illegal nature of the NSA spying scandal. Not only should it disqualify Hayden from having this job, but we should still be pressuring the Bush administration because it's a blatantly illegal act.
All right. And this week there was a FBI report to Congress.
Yes. This is probably going to be the last time we hear about this because the president, in signing the bill for the Patriot Act reauthorization, said explicitly that he did not intend to honor that part of the law that required that the Patriot Act's enforcement mechanisms be reported to Congress each year. Well, that's for 2006. But because it fell under the previous version of the Patriot Act, the Department of Justice still had to report for 2005. They did that this week to Congress, and we learned that the FBI issued something like 9,200 different national security letters to find out information on the finances and various other private transactions of people that were suspected one way or another of being involved in quote-unquote terrorism. This is well over 3,000 different individuals. No idea whether any of these people have actually been charged with anything, but that number has gone up quite a bit. We also learned that the use of electronic surveillance and search warrants, again, for national security-related investigations, went up 15% over 2004. And once again, this is the last year, apparently, unless Bush is challenged on this, where we're actually going to get these numbers. They're going to try and make them secret again after this year.
All right, jumping to international.
I wanted to talk about the Boston Globe report also.
All right,
because it's
squeeze that in.
Yeah, it's important, and nobody heard about it. Report in the Boston Globe last Sunday that this sort of defiance associated with signing statements is not just about the torture bill, not just about the Patriot Act, but that Bush has actually done it over 750 times since he first took office in 2001. This should have been front page material all across the country because it means that we have a long-standing, consistent pattern of Bush saying he's going to ignore or amend or interpret laws passed by Congress any way he likes. It's blatantly unconstitutional and really alarming.
All right. International, this week, what happened in Iraq?
Quite a bit. The Senate joined the House, which passed a similar resolution in March, in saying that the U.S. was not going to establish any permanent bases in Iraq if the Senate had anything to do with it and had no intention of trying to control Iraq's oil reserves. Of course, this is not binding on the Bush administration. It's basically a sense of Congress. It's a nice sense. We hope they pay attention to it, but let us not be surprised if they don't. At the same time, we had a report out of the Baghdad morgue, which serves only the Baghdad area and serves only non-natural causes of death, that in the months of March and April, this is after the Samarra bombing of February 22nd, so it's primarily sectarian violence we're talking about, over 3,000 people were killed in the Baghdad area. That's 90% of those were gunshot wounds, which basically is the executions from death squads. The norm, end quote, is that they had been tortured. These are all the earmarks of civil war, and it's happening in Baghdad, in the capital, and you know we're not hearing about it on the evening news. Finally, and this has to do with Iraq, but it also has to do in general with the prosecution of the alleged war on terror. Amnesty International came out with a report on the behavior of the United States still torturing routinely in Afghanistan, in Iraq, at Guantanamo. And this report is tied with a UN hearing that started yesterday and will continue on Monday, which is actually in Geneva, which is actually the first time that the United States has had to face any kind of an international body and defend its implementation of the various international treaties it signed that ban torture. And the United States and the Bush administration, of course, are saying, well, we don't torture. But, for instance, one of the questions that they faced yesterday at the hearing was, well, if you're so opposed to torture, how come of these 600 or so officers that have been accused of it, only 10 have received prison sentences of a year or more? All the rest have received slap on the wrist or nothing. So this is something the U.S. is going to have to respond to on Monday, and we're probably going to hear more about it in the future.
All right. And then jumping over to Iran.
Yeah, a lot's going on with Iran. We've started hearing finally in the mainstream press something that's been bubbling around on the internet for a couple of months, which is that Valerie Plame Wilson, when she was outed in 2003, it wasn't just to get back at Joseph Wilson for his exposure of the lies leading up to the invasion of Iraq. Valerie Wilson was working on a covert operation that monitored the nuclear proliferation compliance and the nuclear program of Iran. So for the last 3 years, because of the outing not only of Valerie Wilson, but of the entire storefront operation Brewster Jennings that she was working with, the United States has not had any reliable intelligence on Iran's nuclear capabilities. This means, of course, that Bush and the neocons in his administration, who've wanted all along to invade Iran, have been free to make up whatever they want to because there's no actual intelligence around to contradict it. So there were actually two reasons for outing Valerie Plame Wilson, both of which are pretty disturbing.
All right.
We had some other stuff going on with Iran this week also. We had the former Iranian ambassador saying that Tehran is perfectly aware that the United States has special forces operating within Iran, trying to stir up trouble and make allies among some of the ethnic groups that are opposed to the government in Tehran, also some of the various dissident groups in there, but that Tehran doesn't want to confront the United States over it because they don't want to give Washington an excuse to invade. We also had the IAEA stating that Iran didn't meet its deadline for stopping its enrichment of uranium. Therefore, it's been referred to the UN Security Council, where Britain, France, and the U.S. are already trying to draft a motion to impose sanctions. Russia and China have already said they're not going to go along with it. So, yeah, we tried diplomacy, but it didn't work, so we're going to have to bomb. To that end, the Salt Lake Tribune, of all places, is reporting, and again, it hasn't really been picked up anywhere else, that the Nevada test site famous old repository of all things nuclear in southern Nevada is going to have a test in June, and they've named this, quote, Divine Strike. I love how they come up with these various names. Divine Strike is going to be a simulation of a nuclear detonation in the Nevada desert, and the purpose of this is to determine what size of small nuclear device would be necessary to destroy the underground nuclear facilities that are buried in Iran. So they're trying to calibrate exactly what size of a nuke they would need in order to get at these sites. That's going to be Divine Strike. It will be held next month at the Nevada test site. So they are actually preparing for the possible option of using nuclear weapons.
All right. And as well, there was something happening with the Hoover Institute. Apparently they had a little gig.
Down in Palo Alto, the Hoover Institute, which is a very conservative think tank operating out of Stanford University that has been pushing very hard with the neocons and the Bush administration for a strike on or invasion of Iran. Bush went there to huddle with these folks a couple weeks ago, and 1,000 people showed up to protest and actually blocked the doors of the Hoover Institute, and they had to move the meeting, which was a nice little victory because, of course, you can't have George Bush actually seeing protesters. That would be a bad thing. And one other note that our Nicholas Burns, who's the Undersecretary of State in the Bush administration, who is responsible, basically, he's their lead person on Iran, he's responding to the various overtures that Iran has made that they don't want to negotiate with the European Union any longer. They want to negotiate directly with the United States because it's clearly Washington that's calling the shots in this essentially manufactured international crisis. And so they want to negotiate. Well, Mr. Burns is having nothing of that. Here's the quote. Isolation, not engagement, is the only acceptable approach. So, once again, the Bush administration refusing to negotiate with the people that it's demonizing and trying to whip up support for a military strike against.
Okay. Well, and moving along, it turns out the Bagram Air Base, if you're looking for a good hard drive, that's the place to get it.
Yes, it is. We had a report in the LA Times about 3 weeks ago that the various people, Afghans who work on the Bagram Base, this is an enormous base north of Kabul that until now has been notorious mostly for how it treats prisoners, that Afghans who work on the base and various people who rummage through the garbage because it's a very poor country. There's this enormous bazaar that operates right outside the main gates of Bagram and caters not only to people on the base but also in the local community. Turns out that flash drives from the computers that are being retrieved from the garbage or stolen from the base were showing up at this bazaar with military secrets on them that you could buy openly at the bazaar. A reporter from the LA Times went in about 3 weeks ago and bought a bunch of them. Well, when this was published, the military, of course, decided to crack down on this. So what they did is they went through the bazaar and bought all the flash drives. Well, capitalism being what it is, the Afghans took the obvious lesson from this, which is that if you retrieve these flash drives, you're going to be able to sell them. You can sell them right back to the military. You can sell them their own garbage. So the military announced that it was cracking down. There were no more flash drives at the bazaar. Well, of course, 2 weeks later, now it turns out there are even more flash drives at the bazaar. They're being, again, smuggled off the base, and they're available there with military secrets for anybody who cares to buy them.
Wow. Sounds like they're going to be having a two-for-one sale here pretty soon with buy a flash drive, get an orange jumpsuit to match.
Yes. Or maybe they'll just test Divine Strike there.
Yeah. Quickly, you reported on Mexico looking at decriminalization laws last week.
Yes, and of course, not surprisingly, the United States was very disturbed about this development and applied a great deal of pressure to the Vicente Fox outgoing administration, and Mexico has had to back down. Now, Mexico has presidential elections that are coming up in a few months. The leading candidate is a left-of-center candidate, once again, as has happened in much of South America and Latin America. And this is only going to bolster the case and the sentiment among Mexicans. Whether or not you agreed with the decriminalization of drugs, what you have is Washington interfering in the internal affairs and the internal lawmaking of Mexico. And a lot of people in Mexico resent that. And that's going to rebound against Washington in these presidential elections.
All right. And also briefly, Bolivia is looking at nationalizing some of their energy.
Yes. Evo Morales, who swept to victory, the first indigenous leader anywhere in Latin America a few months ago. And he announced this week that Bolivia was going to nationalize the natural gas reserves that they have, which is the second largest in the world. And the whole scheme to privatize natural gas reserves in Bolivia and basically have them controlled by American corporations was what sent people into the streets a couple of years ago, led to the downfall of a couple of governments, and basically led to Morales coming to power. He also signed a trade pact with Venezuela and Cuba, the two biggest bogeymen in Latin America as far as Washington, D.C. is concerned. And so the over-under on a U.S.-backed coup attempt against Morales in Bolivia is probably at about 6 months right now.
All right. Let's jump to events coming up this week.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on this week. Starting with, as David Waters mentioned in the 7:30 segment, the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Council has meetings a couple times a year in different parts of the country, and they're in Seattle this weekend. We had Father Roy Bourgeois last night, who gave a fabulous presentation. And there are workshops and panels all day today. I'm giving one of the workshops, but there are also tremendously qualified people giving a lot of workshops and things, you know, activists in different areas talking about strategies. And the overall theme is Ways to Resist. It's absolutely free, open to the public. Starts at 9 o'clock, so you still have time to get over there. You have a couple minutes anyway.
Drive safely.
Yes, but if you're late, I'm sure you'll still be welcome. Yeah, it's going on all day long. University Friends Meeting, 41st and 9th Northeast in the U District. Please come check it out. And information and counseling available on war tax resistance as well. But it's not just war tax resistance. It's always that we resist the military empire that is the United States government. We have a number of other events coming up this week. Monday night, Cindy Sheehan and Arnold,
Anthony Arnov.
I can never remember his name. He's the author of the new book on why we should get out of Iraq right now. And it's been very well received. He and Cindy Sheehan will be at Town Hall on Monday night. On Tuesday, Eat the State is having a benefit. We had David Barsamian in town last weekend, and that was fabulous. For anybody who was there, they had a great time. We're doing a music benefit coming up on Tuesday night. It'll be at the Tractor Tavern, which is 5213 Ballard Avenue Northwest. Artist The Spoon Man, both a major and the Patriot Act, suggested donation $7. Please come help us party. It's our 10th anniversary, and we'll have a good time. If you don't feel like music, if you'd rather go to a public hearing instead, and we know there are some of you out there and you don't get the treatment you need, there's a public hearing on Hanford, as I mentioned, talking about the cleanup priorities. It's going to be held at something called the Tolaris Conference Center, which I'm actually not familiar with. The address is 4000 Northeast 41st Street near the UW in Laurelhurst. That's a public hearing on Hanford. Also Tuesday night, Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, who famously said on 60 Minutes that the Iraq sanctions that killed 500,000 children at the time, that the price was worth it. She's going to come and critique current Iraq policy. That ought to be a hoot. That'll be at Town Hall on Tuesday. On Thursday, there will be a going-away party for the Sonics to protest the possible and actually at this point probable use of taxpayer money to build a new arena for our NBA basketball team. Find Then Leave is the title of it. It will be a going-away party complete with presents, toasts, etc. That'll be at noon at City Hall on Thursday the 11th. And then Thursday night, Desmond Tutu, will be in town. He will be speaking for free at St. Mark's Cathedral at 7 o'clock. The doors open at 5:30, and it will be first come, first serve, and they ask that you not come before 2 o'clock, because I imagine there will be a very long line to see the Archbishop.
Well, I know I'm not getting the treatment I need.
Yeah, none of us are.
In that fact. Talking, as we do every week, with Job Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State is this fabulous little community newspaper that we've been putting out for 10 years now, mostly with volunteer labor. It comes out every other week. It's free at cafes and bookstores and King County Library System and wherever else you find free publications. It's also available on the web, along with all of our back issues, some 300-something of them, at www.eatthestate.org. There's also a blog there with you know, ongoing breaking news and events we don't have room for in the publication itself, that's worth checking out. Because it's a volunteer organization, we have the benefits, which I mentioned earlier. We also are always looking for volunteers. We're always looking for donations. We're always looking for feedback. And any help that you can give, contact us through the website or give our voicemail a jingle. It's area code 206-719-6947.